Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 5th, 2015. A government spokesman says the Kiir administration is too broke to implement the peace agreement signed in August.
We are very frank. We don't have money in the government of South Sudan. And the rebels have no money. So we agreed that, yes, we should mobilize resources. Because without resources, it will even be difficult for us to start the process as of now.
And the Minister of Transportation admits government's failure to regulate air safety in South Sudan.
We don't have the capabilities, we don't have the team, the expertise to ascertain the airworthiness of aircraft. That's why we don't register the companies here in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Minister of Transportation, Roads and Bridges says at least 37 people perished in yesterday's cargo plane crash on a small island in the River Nile near Juba International Airport. Kwang Gatluak says more bodies may be recovered by divers. The black box, which investigators used to determine what caused the crash, has yet not been recovered. Ayen Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
The plane's maker says the Russian-built Antonov 12 cargo plane was in no shape to fly. The Antonov company, based in Ukraine, told United Press International that the plane did not receive proper, timely maintenance. The plane was registered to the Republic of Tajikistan, according to United Press International. There have been 14 plane crashes recorded in the country since South Sudan gained its independence. Out of that number, 11 have resulted in the total loss of the plane, and out of those crashes, two of them, including yesterday's crash, have resulted in fatalities. Transportation Minister Gatluak acknowledges that South Sudan's aviation industry is too young and inexperienced to handle the requirements of running a safe and efficient industry.
We don't have the capabilities, we don't have the team, the expertise to ascertain the airworthiness of aircraft. That's why we don't register the companies here in South Sudan. We don't have the capacity yet. So they are registered in other countries, and when they are allowed to fly, this is where we rely on the registration in foreign countries. We don't register planes in South Sudan.
Gatluak says South Sudan does not have a radar system that monitors its airspace. He also admits the government missed its own audit of airplanes in Juba International earlier this year. The government did not have the resources or expertise to conduct the audit. He says the country is overwhelmed with other pressing issues at the moment.
It's taken so long because of the different priorities in the country. Maybe for us to talk about spending a lot of money on aviation, how many citizens are going to fly? Maybe there's another critical issue. People look at. Maybe you want to build roads first, maybe you want to build hospitals, you want to build schools, and that's the scenario. There are competing demands in the country, so this is the real challenge. There was no much thought that people should invest heavily on aviation.
Gatluak says officials from UNMISS, the International Red Cross, and government officials are investigating the crash.
Unless we build our capacity, we will not be able to be up to the challenge, because it's not easy. You need some experience, you need some resources to invest in aviation industry.
The African Union Commission Chairperson, Kosazana Zuma, expressed commiseration with the victims and families of the dozens of people who lost their lives in the crash. Antonov also released a statement saying the company presents its condolences to the families of people who suffered from the Antonov 12B crash. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
The South Sudan government spokesman says the Kiir administration does not have the money to implement the peace agreement signed in August by both warring parties. Michael Makui is calling on the international community, which helped broker the deal, to provide money needed for building institutions as stipulated in the deal. Philip Thonaleu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Information Minister Michael Makui told reporters in Juba today that feeding the former rebel forces and forming assembly areas is expensive. Makui says the peace will be implemented in Juba after the capital is demilitarized. Makui, who led the government delegation to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia last week to sign a permanent security arrangements deal with the armed opposition and former detainees, says neither the government nor the opposition has enough money to implement certain provisions in the agreement.
We don't have the money. Later, we are very frank. We don't have money in the government of South Sudan. And the rebels have no money. So we agreed that, yes, we should mobilize resources. Because without resources, it will even be difficult for us to start the process as of now.
Makui says the government needs additional funds for things like feeding and housing the opposition forces, creating assembly areas, clearing roads to military barracks, and providing transportation. He says the government and armed oppositions are appealing to IGAD member countries as well as the United States, Norway, Great Britain, China, and the European Union to put up money to fund the peace deal. Makui says the government will fund the accommodations of SPLMIO officials and former detainees once they return to Juba, but he says it won't be cheap.
We are talking about huge sums that will be actually be spent on the implementation, because the implementation in terms of costing is billions.
SPLMIO leader Riek Machar has also told South Sudan in Focus in the first that neither the government nor its organizations has the money to fund the provisions in the peace deal. Makui says South Sudan's finance ministry will prepare a detailed budget for implementing the deal during the free transitional and transitional periods. The proposal will be presented to donors at a future venue yet to be worked out. Apart from the funding problem, Makui says the two parties agreed on security arrangements for Juba, Bor, Malakal, and Bentiu. He says Bor, Malakal, and Bentiu, capitals of the states that have seen the worst fighting, have a special status.
It was also agreed that there shall be a joint integrated police in these three towns, and that the representation shall be 400 per party. That is 400 from the government, 400 from the IO, and these forces will take charge of the security of these three towns.
Makui says the government is optimistic that a permanent ceasefire will hold this time around, and that both parties will remain in Juba to implement the agreement.
There will be no going to Addis any longer or to any other part of Sudan, of South Sudan. We hope that our brothers who are no longer rebels will not refer to them any longer as rebels, and that they come. We are expecting their advance team to be arriving in mid-November.
Ban Makui says other challenges remain, including what appears to be a split among rebel commanders. But he says such challenges will be overcome if the parties cooperate. Meanwhile, Makui says the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, former Botswana President Fitus Gotabene Mogae, is due to arrive in Juba today to meet with President Salva Kiir. He says the JMEC office is scheduled to open in Juba in 2 weeks' time. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
Speaking to reporters today, Makui had another warning for journalists. He says any reporter who uses what he calls hostile language will face the consequences. Makui says such language could inflame the conflict. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
Makui says journalists should, as he put it, reconsider their language of reporting. For example, Makui says journalists should no longer refer to members of the armed opposition led by former Vice President Riek Machar as rebels.
We have accepted peace, we are for peace, and we don't want anybody to say whatever against the other. But let us talk language of peace, language of unity, peace and peaceful coexistence.
Makui asserts that some media houses use hostile language and hate speech, something he says must stop immediately now that the two parties have peacefully resolved their differences. He did not name which media outlets he is referring to, but he called on radio station managers to end live talk shows claiming they inflate hate speech in the country.
It is these contacts which you make directly in the air, by telephonate, in your radios, that cause us problems. We don't want such programs to continue unless you are sure of the person you are talking. If you continue to allow those who use that language, we will be on your neck.
Alfred Soka, news editor at the Juba-based Catholic Radio Network, insists South Sudanese journalists have not been using hate speech or hostile language. He says they inform and educate the public in a professional manner. He adds that journalists have rights and cannot control the opinions of others.
Some people who are not aware of media laws, of media ethics, were the one using rough language because they are not actually trained and they are not journalists, but they are people who use their opinions. So these people, you cannot bring them into the plane of the journalists and combine them all together to be journalists.
Soka says it's bloggers and social media commentators rather than journalists who sometimes use hate speech to incite one group against another.
The journalists are people who are trained. They are given ethics. They follow sensitive reporting skills. It is actually the social media that is inflaming the fire other than trained journalists. So the two should be differentiated.
He says there is no need for the government to shut down radio stations.
If a journalist commits a mistake, he is to be charged according to an article in the media law or in the media act, so that things are followed in letter and spirit. Because if we actually talk the opposite and we don't implement the laws that we create, it means we are making laws for other people and we don't follow the laws.
This is not the first time Makwei has warned reporters about how they do their job. In March of last year, he branded journalists who interview rebels and report their views as rebel supporters and agitators. And in May of this year, he threatened to take any journalist to court who reports the views of the rebels. That threat has never been rescinded by the government. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report in Juba. Western Equatoria State's Tambura County is now calm, according to Deputy Governor Bulen Abiatara. Fighting broke out between government soldiers and civilians on Monday and continued on Tuesday. We get more from VOA fellow Kaltuma Vanessa.
Deputy Governor Bulen Abiatara says three people were killed and three others were wounded during the attack, which he says began in a market between a civilian and a soldier. State officials traveled to Tambura to calm the situation, including the Western Equatorial State Governor. Abiatara says the dispute between the civilian and the soldier escalated to gunshots being fired around the town. That is when people began to flee their homes to escape the violence.
It was just in the market. It was the place of those. And I think it was very small. It was very small the problem. But then, you know, because it remained to that solving immediately, then it expanded and resulted to the exchanging of the fire.
The commissioner of Tambura County, Charles Babiro, who said he was attacked while on his way to Yumpayam on Tuesday, where the fighting began, confirms the situation is now calm. Babiro says people are returning to their homes. He also says the security forces and the government is working together to resolve the dispute.
This morning I held a security meeting with all the organized forces, including the army. I also went to the army barracks. I talked to them, I encouraged them. I think they were happy, and I told them that what has happened in Yadarpayam should be treated as an isolated case. So also they assured me of the security.
Charles says in order to prevent future conflict, the government must train its soldiers to abide by the laws of the country.
My advice is that now that they have signed the final security arrangement protocol for attaining peace in the Republic of South Sudan, my advice is that the government should now prepare and arrange for getting the two national armies and then to be trained in discipline, to be trained with code of conduct and ethics.
Several attacks occurred in Western Equatoria's Maridi, Mondri, and now Tombura in recent weeks. Citizens blame those attacks on SPLA soldiers. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, politicians in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state are arguing about who should be the next governor of New Wau State.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are you happy with the state of your country? Why or why not?
I'm happy with it, with the state of my country, because by then we were not having freedom, but this time we were having freedom in our country.
The state of my country, I'm not happy with it because there's a lot of insecurities going on in our country, and you can't move safely like at night because you have that fear that anything can happen to you.
Yes, I'm happy of my country because of our development and our leadership.
If it is my country, I'm not happy because we are smelling peace from other countries, but in our country, situations have gone worse. One is actually prices of commodities have gone very high. Secondly, insecurity.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Lawmakers from the ruling SPLM party and the United Sudan Africa Party are already arguing over who should be the next governor of the proposed Wau state before parliament votes on whether to approve President Kiir's order to create 28 states. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Wau.
A dispute is brewing among politicians from the Luo community in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state. A few days ago, USA party leader Joseph Okel, who was in Wau to urge that SPLM supporter Elias Waya be appointed the new proposed Wau state governor by President Kiir. But members of the Luo community loyal to the SPLM are accusing Okel of meddling in the affairs of a party he does not belong to. Justin Moses Ugodo is a member of the Luo community loyal to the SPLM. Ugodo says the SPLM in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state has yet to propose any name to President Kiir for governor of the proposed Wau state because they are awaiting parliament's decision on the 28 states. Speaking in Arabic, Ugodo says they support the creation of the new states, but the proposal is still in a parliament for deliberation and no one knows if the MPs are going to approve 28 states or less or even more. He says that is why the SPLM in his area are waiting. He says if it is signed by the president, then they will choose who will lead their people, but not now. Ugodo faults Okel for secretly nominating Elias Waya and sending his name to President Kiir to appoint as a governor of the proposed Wau state during a meeting with USA party and Luo community members. Ugodo says any political nomination should come through the political party. If Joseph Okel wanted to nominate any one of the members, he should have come to their office first before announcing it to the public. After that, he says, the party leadership will decide, not him. Okel insists that it is not him, but the Luo community who proposed Wyatt's name for the state governor's position. He says, as a leader, he could not go against the interests of his community. Speaking in Arabic, Okel says the group that came to his house came to him for consultation as one of the Luo community members and as a political leader. He did not call them. He says they came asking if he could take the nominated name to the president. He says, I can. Okel's USA party is allied to the ruling SPLM. He was among the officials who took part in the recent Addis Ababa peace talks. Okel says it is time for democracy among all political parties in South Sudan. Stephen Robo Musa works for the national NGO, Community Empowerment for Progress Organization in Wau. He says the newly created states should unite South Sudanese rather than divide them.
Speaking in Arabic, Robo says, our people should come out from the tribes to the national circle. He says, they should have a national spirit. He says his people are expecting leaders who provide them with basic services, not the tribal representation or individuals. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
A three-day conference aimed at increasing the number of women who help make decisions in government and society kicked off in Yei County yesterday. The conference is organized by the Center for Democracy and Development and is funded by a U.S.-based organization, the National Endowment for Democracy. VOA fellow Tito Justin has the story from Washington.
The conference drew some 150 participants from Yei, Lanya, and Morobe counties. About 20 men, including government officials, are taking part in the conference. Ricky James Moses, executive director of the Center for Democracy and Development, says most of the issues affecting women in their communities involve educational and cultural limitations.
Women are complaining that the parents are paying much attention to educating boys other than girls, because they believe that when you educate girls, you're trying to waste money, because the girl will be impregnated and next tomorrow she'll drop out of school, and it is a waste of resources. So they have not been given those opportunities for education. That's why sometimes they are being excluded from leadership.
Some women at the conference say they have the intellect and power to do what men do. They just are not given a chance to prove it. Participant Mary Boka of Yei says, often times, women are not allowed to speak loudly at community events, that their voices are silenced. She says she's going to take the knowledge she has learned at the conference and tell everybody in her community to respect women's ideas.
People, they say, if you educate a lady, you educate a nation. So I would like really to tell my church members, if I go back, I need them to really to consider the girl child to be a leader, starting from the school as a prefect, even the church as a choir leader, then go to the society.
Ajonye Mary, a conference participant from Morobu, says it's now their responsibility to empower other women. She says since most women are not educated, they are cast aside, not allowed to help make decisions in the community. Now Mary says she has the confidence to encourage other women to speak up.
So I'm able to identify that it is wrong to discriminate a woman from a society. Then I'm also able to identify the solution by creating awareness so that women can know their role in the society.
According to Joseph, developing a country like South Sudan will be impossible if women's input is excluded from society. He says the group's resolution to be voted on tomorrow will be shared nationwide after the conference wraps up tomorrow.
After the conference, we are going to come up with the strong resolutions, which resolutions are going to be presented to the government, to the decision makers in government, to the policy makers, and also to other stakeholders like civil society organizations, so that these issues can be shared widely and the kind of action be taken to improve women inclusion in the decision-making process.
Central Equatoria Center for Democracy and Development is a civil society organization that works to promote good governance at the grassroots level. It was formed in 1998. And I am Tito Justin for VOA News in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan's Minister of Transportation, Roads and Bridges says at least 37 people perished in yesterday's cargo plane crash on a small island in the River Nile near Juba International Airport. Kwang Gatluak says more bodies may be recovered by divers today. The black box, which investigators hope will provide some clues as to what caused the crash, has yet to be recovered. The plane's maker says the Russian-built Antonov 12 cargo plane was in no condition to fly. The Antonov company told UPI that the plane did not receive proper, timely maintenance and was registered to the Republic of Tajikistan. 14 plane crashes have occurred in South Sudan since it gained its independence. Out of that number, 11 of the planes were deemed total losses. Two of them, including yesterday's crash, have resulted in fatalities. Transportation Minister Gatluak admits South Sudan's aviation industry is young and inexperienced. 2 days after signing an agreement to implement provisions of the peace deal, South Sudan's information minister says the government doesn't have the money to fund the agreement. It wants the international community, which helped broker the agreement, to provide the funds. Michael McQuay says feeding and sheltering the opposition forces, forming assembly areas, and providing transportation takes money, money the government does not have. McQuay says the peace deal will be implemented in Juba after the capital is demilitarized. But McQuay says neither the government nor the opposition has the money to implement security arrangements and other provisions in that agreement. And speaking at the same news conference in Juba today, Minister McQuay issued another warning to journalists, refrain from using what he calls hostile language or face the consequences. McQuay says such language could reignite the conflict. He says journalists should reconsider their language of reporting. For example, McQuay says journalists should no longer refer to members of the armed opposition as rebels. McQuay insists that some media outlets use hate speech. He did not name names. He also says all live radio talk programs should be canceled. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday, and we now leave you with the song Labi Amaro by Mede Muzika.
Labi Amaro Nimikacha Amaro Mururu Olena Mari Vono Andrenandero Cecilia
Labi Amaro Nimikachi Amaro
Atane Morosi
Olena Mario Somururu Nye Vono Andrenandero
Jason Ginedrici
Oso Hati Amabesina Mururu Nye
Limingo
Utane Jine Oso Ngawi Kakechi Apuru Nye
Mondo lobby na koro
fashe
Azifu azifu
Uni kakachi na rube Uni kakachi na rube
Jika tetara lukudea
Labi amaru
Minga kuru
Kibikechi amaru
Belenwa
Walebe ombari osomuru Minye kuna onene
Daniel Paro
Jadobe
La kama dindi yeri kedi bala nyende mambolo singo wandi barita pari
jambo amati agu kotobi
apanda naru nga kidine ogu osane agu apana marayasi
iza
chuaru obane agu pati biyafune ni ebe onrebe taro yasi
kutu alo
labi amaru nimi kechi
We have been listening to Mede Muzika with that song, Lebi Amaro. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thank you.